Special Meeting of the Board of Directors, E-Bikes Community Advisory Committee, Meeting Number 4, Tuesday, December 10th, 2019.
We spent a lot of time demobbing some scrubbing the mud off the ATVs.
They were kind of.
They've actually, you've got to clean them up. And to do a proper ride.
My favorite route, anything down.
The rider should be, because I'm not going to go back.
No, totally.
But then you want them to look good. They can't. ATVs can have that.
If I see them drive.
We're on fire.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'll have to try it. Okay, everybody, let's go ahead and get started on this drizzly evening, approaching the holidays. I'm sure everybody has lots of preparation that they need to get going on. And
solstice.
It could be solstice. I appreciate your being here tonight and once again joining us for discussion on e-bikes. My name is Crystal Yesman. I'm the Facilities and Watershed Division Manager. And before we go around the dais to introduce ourselves once again, let me point out in the audience tonight we do have we had him a moment ago. Ben Hornstein, our general manager. I think he just stepped out of the office or out of the room. He's going to sit in for the first part of the meeting. And we did expect a couple of board members this evening, so you might see them filter in a little later. Just for the audience's information, restrooms are down the hall, out these doors, all the way to the center of the building. In the very center of the building, you'll find them on each corner of the center. All right, I'm going to go ahead and kick it off and hand it over to Sam, and he'll get us started tonight.
Great. Thank you, Crystal. Welcome, everybody, and thank you for coming to this fourth meeting of the Marin Municipal Water District's E-Bikes Community Advisory Committee. Staff has been hard at work on a number of pieces since the last time we got together in November. So I want to kind of move through things as quickly as possible. Last time we were aware that we sort of ran short on public comment time towards the end, so we're going to keep things moving and make sure that any members of the public who are interested in delivering comment at the end have the opportunity to speak. Just a quick reminder to all of the advisory committee members, presenters, and members of the public. I would just ask that you speak only into the microphone. Speak slowly and clearly to make sure not only that we can record, but also that everybody's able to hear. Okay. You'll probably hear me deliver a number of reminders to do that throughout the session. As Crystal mentioned, we want to quickly go around the dais here and just get a very brief introduction from our advisory committee members present, as well as any staff. If you wouldn't mind just stating your name and organization for the members of the public who are attending, that'd be wonderful. So we'll kick off.
I'm Gail. I'm a retired social worker. I don't really represent an organization, but I volunteer at Wild Care and China Camp State Park for many years.
Thank you, Gail.
Jonathan Freeman.
Thank you.
Bill Abright.
Sierra Salen.
Bob Middlestead.
Robert Eichstead.
Debbie Raffel.
Brett Pettisich, Park Ranger with the Water District.
Sean Horn, Watershed Resource Manager with the Water District.
Hi, I'm Cherise Bernilla, Administrative Assistant with the Water District.
Thank you. And before we jump into today's presentation, Cherise, I see that one person has already given you a public comment card. For any members of the public who are interested in speaking at the end of tonight's session, please do go ahead and grab one of the orange comment cards in the back there, fill it out, and get it to any of us, but hand it to Cherise, and we'll work through the public comment queue at the end of the discussion today. All right, let's go ahead and jump into it. As I said, this is the fourth meeting of the advisory committee. I want to give you just a quick overview of what we're hoping to cover today. We'll start out with a very short review of some of what's happened during some of the previous meetings and a discussion of the next subject for the January meeting of this group. And then we are going to jump into a presentation on the watershed user census survey that the district conducted a number of years ago. If you remember, the purpose of today's meeting is really on user group interactions between different user groups. And we thought some of that historical information would be very useful for all of you to have a good understanding of who's using the watershed. You'll find that over the last 3 years or so, since the survey was the census was conducted, not a lot's changed in terms of the actual types of recreation and users up there in the watershed. So Sean's going to run through that. And then I will, I'll run you through the results from the, very informal informational survey that's been conducted over the last month. If you recall at the last meeting, we presented a number of questions for you for a user survey. We've at least started, collecting responses from folks out on the watershed. So we'll discuss that a little bit. The thing that I want people to remember, though, unlike the census, that was a very large study done of the entire watershed using fairly scientifically rigorous means, the informal survey that was conducted was really just meant to take the temperature of current users out there, specifically in relation to e-bikes. We made a number of changes to that survey, so you'll see the results that were collected, and you'll have the opportunity to ask any questions of that as well. And then finally, we brought in a group who's really been working collaboratively across various user groups to provide some information on the Slow and Say Hello campaign and other trail user efforts that are going on in the watershed right now. So Tom Boss from MCBC and Kurt from the Marin Equestrian Council, Horse Council, are here to discuss that a little bit. The other partnership in that group is MCL. I'm sure most of you are aware of the work that they've done, but they'll give you a good understanding of what they've observed out on the watershed, the campaign and educational efforts that that they've conducted over the last several years. And then, as always, we'll wrap up with public comment, as I mentioned. Before we jump into the presentation, though, I just wanted to see if any of you had any questions about this meeting. And one thing to note, you know, MCL is not directly represented here in presenting. We're well aware, and it's been brought up in a number of your comments, that pedestrian and hikers are one of the largest user groups on the watershed. They're not directly represented today, but we'll have time to discuss with all of you at the end. If there are any specific hiking-related groups that you'd like to see come and present as well at the next meeting. Any questions from the advisory committee before we...
Could I ask why they're not representing tonight? Do you have any idea?
If I may.
Yes, please, Kurt, if you wouldn't mind using the microphone.
Hi, Kurt Kruger. The presentation was created collaboratively among MCL, MCBC, and the Marin Horse Council. So we made a decision on that Tom and I would do the actual presentation, but the content was jointly developed with MCL.
Thank you, Kurt. Yes, Debbie.
Yeah, thank you. So last meeting, you gave us some reading.
Yes.
That was actually fascinating.
Oh, wonderful.
I've annotated it, and I'm really interested in some of it. How are you thinking we might, as a group, talk about that data? And because it is talking about impacts, and it's got some... I think some interesting table and graphics that I'd like to talk about.
If it's okay, can I jot that question down and come back to it towards the end here when we talk about the next meeting and how we're going to start formulating recommendations with all of you?
Okay.
Is that okay? Yeah. Thank you very much.
Right. And let me say that we do have a couple meetings at the end reserved just for discussion. So they're not specific to a topic. So it's for discussion, the last two meetings.
That's largely what I was going to say with a little more detail later. Yeah. So thank you, Crystal. Sierra.
And that might address more what I was going to get at, is it seems like there's not a whole lot of communication within this group.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be nice if there was a little bit more going on or happening or discussion or something. It just seems like we come, we're gone, we come again. There's absolutely nothing in between, and there's not really a whole lot of cohesion or interaction.
Yeah. So we'll discuss process at the end, but that's one of the things that we want to touch on. Thank you. All right. Not seeing any other hands up. At this point, go ahead.
The other thing is just e-bikes are definitely in the news. The Park Service is currently Park Service or Point Reyes is currently, state or feds, whoever it is currently being sued for their e-bike policy that they rolled out. So there's, it's going both ways.
By MCL.
And others.
And others, okay. And hopefully we can get a presentation on some of those efforts at a later date, but we'll just flag it and keep it in mind. All right. Knowing that we really want to get to that larger conversation about the process, let me go ahead and hand it over to Sean now to discuss the census. Sean?
So good evening, everyone. As we mentioned at the last meeting, we had gone through a larger census for the watershed in 2013-2012, and this was really to provide the district with some more information about who's using the trails, the demographics, the times, the patterns, and the attitudes and experiences that users were having on the watershed. And so this is on our website, this whole report and the study that was done. It was carried out using two primary methodologies. One of them was actually to count the visitors coming on the watershed from some of the primary access points. And then the other was actually to do an in-person survey. So we had a contact with 1,200 people to do the actual paper survey, and then we counted about 13,000 people coming onto the watershed at different points. So that's really the methods that were used for this survey and this census. And so we're just going to present you some of the findings of that census because it really gives you an understanding globally of who's using the watershed and what their experience is. And so we think that's really important for you all to consider as we have this discussion. Go ahead.
I just wanted to clarify that it would tell you who's using the watershed in 2013.
Correct.
It's been 7 years.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And to be honest, the user groups are the same. We haven't had significant changes in the user groups. And there's some predictions about how use would grow in this report. So we'll present some of that to you. And it's detailed the statistics and how they came up with the numbers in the report. So just going over it, like I mentioned, we had 13,000 people counted on the watershed. 935 of those visitors had dogs. 30% of those visitors were cyclists. 70% were pedestrians. And 0.4% were equestrians. 88% of the dogs were on leash, which is a really good number. So this chart right here is presented in the report, and this gave some estimations of annual activity on the watershed. And so they had some low numbers, about 1.1 million, and to Bill's point, in 2013, 2014, on the high end, that was around 3 million. And so the statistics and how they came up with these numbers are presented in more detail in the report if you want to see that. And this was basically built off of the daily visits that they were counting and then extrapolated. So
Hold on a second. I'm going to go back to the previous page. It said 0.4% were equestrians. Does that mean number of horses?
Yes, and people.
All right. Any other animals counted?
Just dogs.
Just dogs. Okay.
Yeah. We're going to get through the presentation. So of those visitors, this frequency is really important because we noticed that daily and weekly visitors reoccurring made up almost 50% or more of those counted. So that means of that larger number that we saw, 1.2 million, 1.5 million, what maybe is our annual activity, you know, a lot of that is reoccurring visitors from Marin County likely. So 67% of the people surveyed were from Marin County. 15% had traveled from San Francisco County. And of the ones from outside of the county, those 63% of those folks were counted during the weekends.
So basically 16% of people came from out of the county.
Yeah, right.
Another way to say that that's a little more.
Yeah. And just access
to...
What
was that point?
The point is that about 16%...
I can't hear you. Could you just get...
About 16% of people came from out of the county, as opposed to saying 63% of out-of-town visitors came during the weekend. So if you break down the numbers, 67%, 15%, and about 16%.
Okay, thank you.
So people coming to the watershed, how did they get to the watershed? 37% carpooled, 28% drove alone, and 21% rode a bike, and 14% walked. So one of the important things that was looked at in the survey was where are people coming into the watershed from. So the big spikes are the kind of the main point of this graphic, and those are, you know, those primary uses. So those, that's East Peak, and then we have Phoenix Lake, and then we've got Sky Oaks. And so those were the main entry points that saw the most number of visitors. And then of those, you know, large numbers of those were cyclists in both of those, all three of those locations. Sorry.
Was there any number of people that drove with a bicycle?
If you could use the microphone.
Yeah, so number of people that drove with a bicycle. Yeah, we did. That did not get captured in the survey, but likely there were. So watershed use primary activity in the survey that was conducted, you know, 30% of the folks coming to the watershed were coming for hiking. And just to be clear, so this is tallying what the written survey found, not the count, right? So those are different numbers. So 30% said they were coming primarily for hiking. And then we have about 13% were coming for biking. And then other kind of nature viewing, we had this kind of 18%. So this kind of gives you a good kind of descriptor of, like, what are people using the watershed and, you know, what's the percentage? And, you know, we shouldn't weight these percentages, but we should think about them and just understand, you know, how the frequency of people visiting the watershed and how they're using it. And how this discussion will influence their experience. Yeah, go ahead.
Is there a number for how many people were actually surveyed of the 13,098?
Yeah, 1,200.
1,200.
Yeah. So one of the things that was in the survey that folks took, it was kind of rating their experience. In general, we had 90% of folks saying that there was great trail conditions, good to great trail conditions. 64% of people said good to great maps, so that's something for us to consider and when we're thinking about recreation on the watershed. And then, in general, 82% of the people had good to great interactions with other visitors. And I think that's an important component for us to think about, is just when we're thinking about other users and how they're interacting. So suggested watershed improvements, this is one of the things we were asking users to kind of give some input on, you know, what would they like to see on the watershed? Is there ways that we can improve it? About 30% said they loved it. And then we had some good critique on, you know, parking is a major issue on the watershed. We have limited entry points. There's limited parking in some zones, especially Phoenix and Deer Park. Signs and maps, 16% said those could be improved. Restrooms, drinking water. And then rangers, we had 2%. And then the main thing here is negative interactions with bicycles. There's about 4.6% of people commented that they had a negative experience with bicycles. So as all of you, I'm sure, are very aware, you know, there's a seasonality to our user groups. And this survey found that generally, you know, we have more use in our summer months. And then as we start moving into fall and into winter, we have a dip in general.
Our busiest day of the year is Mother's Day weekend.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Not surprised. Right. And, you know, this is, Sam's going to get back up and present some of the findings that we had from this informal survey. And the experience that we had in giving that informal survey really speaks to this, because we had a number of days where it was raining on the last couple of weeks when we tried to get out there and interact with people and have them take those surveys. And on the rainy days, we had folks out looking for people, and we saw 2 people on the watershed. So, you know, it really does speak to the seasonality of users and right. Just the weather conditions as well. So with that, you know, we've provided this census report in the Google Doc. It's also online. We just really wanted to present it to you so you could have a, you know, just a broader understanding of who's using the watershed, how often they're using the watershed, where they're coming from, and how the different user groups are interacting and what their experience has historically been. And we do appreciate that this is, you know, was done in 2013 and 2012, but I think the data that was coming out of it is still informative for us to think about in regards to this discussion. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a really interesting data set. How labor-intensive and expensive was it for you to do this? Do you have any recollection?
Great question. Do you remember, Crystal?
No, I wasn't here when they did it.
Yeah. So I can say, you know, we did use watershed staff to actually do the counts, and then the counts were also done by camera. So those two elements were more cost-effective than outsourcing all of this. But then the data analysis was all done with an outside consultant.
Yeah.
I mean, and we can report, we can find out and come back to the next group and just give you that information for thinking about it.
I think it would be useful just because the question absolutely. I have is, how has it changed over time, and
totally.
Or has it? And
right.
I don't know how hard that is to get.
Yeah, no, we can bring that back next time, no problem.
We were in preparation for another survey, trying to get into the budget around $60,000, but it didn't get approved because we had other core business we needed to fund, like increases in electricity cost.
You know, I don't think this matters. My question matters, okay. But I'm just curious because you've said a couple of times, or somebody said, the usage is probably about the same now as it was 6-7 years ago. And my observation on that is, and I'm curious the basis for that, it comports with my observation that I think, you know, the percentage of bikers and hikers is about what's in here. The only number I think is off, again, doesn't matter to this discussion, but the 88% of dogs on leash back then, I think that probably has changed.
Yeah.
But
and I mean, I think
to
clarify, I think we have had an increase in usage. It's hard to quantify what that increase might be, but the estimates in here were a range. And I think that range, I think we're, you know, still working within that range. You know, the low end
percentage.
Was one, well, the low end estimate was 1 million and the high end was 3 million. And, you know, so, yeah.
I was talking about the percentage use.
Gotcha. By activity. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So any other questions on this report itself? Otherwise, I'm going to hand it off to Sam. And we do want to just acknowledge the next, what we're going to report out now. This was a very informal survey. You know, we put together some questions that we could go out onto the watershed, get people's perspective, and bring those back to you to think about it specifically in relation to e-bikes. It's not meant to be a statistically significant study as this one was. It's really just meant to provide you with some understanding of what the average user on the watershed thinks about this issue.
Out of 44 responses.
Yeah.
And the question is, if we want to keep that going, we can. Yeah. So we just started that out. We had some, you know, 2 weeks of some pretty good weather. And if you would like to, if you think it's meaningful, we're happy to keep it going. So I'll hand it off to Sam.
Great. Thanks, Sean. That was the first question that I had for the group. I think we went out three or between one TAM and staff, you went out three times. Is that correct?
We had 4 days that we went out. And one of those days, you know, we saw two people.
Yeah. And again, you know, the location surveyed mirror what was done for the census as well. But an open question to this group, if you find the information that I'm about to present useful, just let us know. I'll ask the question at the end. Should we keep the survey open? There's not a huge cost associated with it. So, yes.
Where were the surveys distributed or taken? What are the locations?
Yeah. So the first day we went up to West Point Inn. Okay. Two watershed aides spent about 3 hours up at West Point Inn. Mm-hmm. The next day they went down to Phoenix Lake. Okay. So we did a Saturday at West Point Inn, just because that matters. And then we did a weekday at Phoenix Lake. And then we did a weekday at Lagunitas Lake. And those were the three meaningful days. And then we had one day where they were just looking for someone anywhere.
And how long at Phoenix and Lagunitas?
It was about 3 hours each day. Yeah.
And, I mean, getting into the detail, staff were provided with a number of iPads, and the survey was filled out electronically as people came through. All right. So I'll go ahead and jump into it here. As Sierra already pointed out, there were 44 total responses, again, impacted by weather and just the fact that it was a holiday week as well. It was interesting to note that about 50% were from the immediate area, Marin, San Francisco, and 50% were from outside of the immediate area. And that outside group in particular, I think, was really impacted by collecting survey responses at West Point Inn. There were folks from Florida and Arizona and all over the country. So it was interesting to see their perspective as well. But, you know, a significant chunk of the folks were from the area. Ages really varied in the folks that responded to the survey. We had about 50% under age 50 and 50% over. I can give a further breakdown of that if folks are interested. It was fairly well distributed over the, I think, five different options we gave, from under all the way from under 30 to over 70. But it was about 50-50 at that age 50 breakpoint. The largest group of respondents was aged 40 to 50. And I know this is something that came up in the last meeting. It was brought up that it was really important to make sure that there were women responding as well. And actually, a majority of the respondents were women. So, in terms of the actual usage patterns and usage amounts, 26 of the folks, so, you know, a majority of the people sampled reported occasional visits. That's not surprising, given that 22 from out of the area. But there was a significant chunk of folks that fell into the sort of highest user group that we had included in the survey. So 15 said that they were visiting more than four times per month. Right. You'll see a lot of similarities between on this slide to what Sean presented. The largest majority of folks reported that hiking was their primary activity, but we did give people the opportunity to fill out more than one box. So if they biked sometime, they could also check that. Siri, you had a question?
How many of the folks who were approached actually stayed to take the survey? I was just curious about the male-female ratio, if like a bunch of guys just kind of blew on past and didn't want to answer.
I'm sorry, Siri, I can't hear the question.
I was just wondering, in terms of the male-female ratio, how many guys kind of blew on by and didn't want to answer a survey as opposed to the women that maybe stopped and answered the questions. And I'm just curious how many total people were surveyed and chose not to, or was that tabulated at all?
How many people were stopped and chose not to survey it?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
We didn't tabulate that number.
And my only other comment is just in terms of the 50%, I'm more interested and results or responses from people that actually live in the area and use it more so than people from other places. I mean, I think other people's responses are important, but we're the ones that are actually living here, governing it, and taking care of it, and have the history. And I don't want to have the history of some other place more impacting what we're doing.
Understood. And the data can be manipulated in a number of ways, including pulling out the specific responses of those 22. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind once we sort of open it up for conversation at the end and pose the question of whether the survey should continue from here. Bill.
Yeah. I was just wondering, I thought Sierra had a good question there of how many guys might have blown it off and wanted to stop. Did you also have any sense of how many bicyclists might have ridden by instead of wanting to stop, because we suspected that might be a problem.
Sure.
In conveying a survey accurately, that the bicyclist being already moving might want to roll on by. What was your experience, Sean?
You said they didn't count it.
What was that, Gail?
You said you didn't count it. Right?
Yeah, we didn't count that, Bill.
But so, whether you counted it or not, you were there, right?
So no, I did not take.
Oh,
do the
I
survey.
See. I beg
we
your pardon.
We had staff out on the watershed doing it.
I see. I thought it wasn't tabulated, but
no. And we could, if we choose to do this more, we can ask for
do
it, collect
do
that kind of information.
I think it's a good question.
Right. Yeah, well, but just as a reminder, so again, the purpose was to do a temperature check of attitudes towards e-bikes. Right. It was less. It was much less than the census that was previously conducted.
Yeah.
Does that cover your question?
Yeah. But just to note it, when we get to the end and we talk about whether to do it again, to the extent people are concerned about the capacity on the mountain for more activity, and in particular more bikes. My point of view, being somebody who rides up there almost every day, is that we're way, way under capacity. And to the extent that's an issue, I would personally be in favor of doing an informal census. How many people do you actually see up there? And what are they doing? Are they riding bikes or are they hiking?
Yeah.
I have a question. You said something way under capacity in terms of what? I didn't hear.
Oh.
In terms of number of people using the mountain, is there room for more people, or are we overcrowded up there so we ought to be thinking about restricting use? Mm-hmm. That to me is the issue.
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so next we asked a series of questions on people's familiarity with e-bikes. So almost everybody that took the survey reported knowing at least a little about them. 14 reported having ridden an e-bike at least once, and 8 had ridden an e-bike more than 10 times. It doesn't appear on this slide, but another four folks said that they actually owned one, although they were not on e-bikes, as far as I know, the day of the survey itself. Very interestingly, just because it's come up in this group a number of times, nearly everybody said they would recognize an e-bike if they saw one. And as we've discussed time and time again in this group, it may be, in fact, be very challenging to differentiate them from regular bikes. So that was just an interesting point that popped up that I don't think we were expecting when we asked this question of folks. When we started asking questions specifically about their preferences of e-bikes, 23 folks said that they should be allowed on the watershed. Six people specifically said that they should not be allowed, but it's important to remember that a number of people declined to state a clear preference, but expressed specific support or concerns. You know, several people, six, cited safety concerns and specifically excessive speeds or lack of etiquette. Three people said that e-bikes are motorized vehicles and should not be allowed on natural surface fire roads. The specific comment was they were afraid that if you allowed e-bikes, it would open the natural surface fire roads up to regular vehicle traffic, cars and motorcycles, which I, of course, do not want to speak for the district, but that's not the focus of this committee, and it's not something that is being looked at. Six people said that they should be allowed, and again, brought up the issue that we've spoken about a number of times, about, you know, the possibility for increased access by user groups that may be disabled or aging out of using conventional bicycles. And then finally, they also mentioned a lack, there doesn't appear to be an additional impact compared to conventional bicycles. A sizable majority said they weren't aware of any specific safety-related incidents. Again, very specific to e-bikes. 13 people did say that they were aware of incidents, but declined to provide additional details. And you know, if you match this 13 number up, it does, you know, it sort of mirrors the nine in that previous bullet that I shared. But it was kind of surprising to me that 13 mentioned safety concerns but didn't want to provide additional details on it. If the survey were to move forward, we could sort of press people or make that a mandatory question just so we have a better sense of exactly what types of incidents folks are aware of.
I'm wondering, Sam, on the six who said they shouldn't be allowed, was there a question for the reasons?
So it was yes, no. And then they were also given the opportunity to provide additional details. Okay. When I broke apart the actual data itself, so this 29 people that just answered the yes-no question aren't represented, then the 15 declined to state.
If we do it again, I'd be curious. I'd be interested in having, you know, a specific question.
Right.
If somebody says no, perhaps even if they say yes, but what are their reasons? It would be more impactful to me.
Of course. Yeah, and, you know, we sort of balanced the issue. I think in the last meeting, a number of people brought up the issue that nobody's going to slow down to take a 15 or 20-minute survey. So we were trying to keep it as brief as possible, but that's an important point. So we can certainly add that in, or at least make it optional. Yes, Robert.
So 44 responses. I've gotten more than that in surveying my friends, associates, and others, including people randomly encountered. I don't believe that this is a useful survey, even to test the tone and flavor of the world out there. And in fact, unfortunately, you've printed it, and you've included charts with numbers on it, and this is now out in the wild, and it will come back, and it'll bite us on the butt. So I really encourage the district to spend big bucks on official scientific surveys.
Full census. Thank you. Well, with that noted, I will go through the remainder of the findings, but then want to open it up to the full group. The final slide here, people may be familiar with the chart that we had posed in the actual survey questions. There were a number of suggestions or comments that the way some of these questions were worded were too negative, and that that all of the negative questions were piled towards the front of the survey. So we actually broke those up and moved them around to provide some more variation in what was being asked. I won't go through all of these in detail, but just pull out a couple of points that we observed. You'll see the blue bars across across that table are basically, you know, not applicable or not applicable, or people didn't either agree or disagree with the statement. You know, a couple of the points that really pop out, people seem to strongly agree that e-bikes could help bikers riding longer in life due to either age, ability, or injury or disability. Conversely, about the same number of people also said that that e-bikes are more likely to create user conflicts with other groups than conventional bicycles. A couple of the other points, you know, if you look across the table, there was a lot of similarity in responses. People seem to be leaning in the direction that e-bikes could create specific enforcement issues for rangers due to existing motorized vehicle regulations. But on the whole, you know, there weren't any data points that really popped out either in favor or against e-bikes besides the ones that I just mentioned there. Yes.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, for the most part, people seem split on the issue of whether they pose unique safety concerns. They were split on whether e-bikes create unique crowding issues on natural surface fire roads. And they were largely split on whether individuals thought that they do more damage than conventional mountain bikes. Although folks did seem to lean a little bit more in the direction of strongly disagree. Go ahead, Robert.
Just so I don't forget it, if we do this again,
mm-hmm.
on the taking into account your suggestion you don't want this survey to go on forever.
Right.
That fourth question, are they more likely to create conflicts? I'd be more interested in a more specific question about are they going to cause harm to other users? Mm-hmm. Because the answer to that question, are e-bikes likely to create conflict with other users? The answer is yes. That's why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there wasn't any issue of potential conflict, we wouldn't be here. So we know the answer to that question, but whether people think it's going to cause harm to other people, other users, I think that's maybe this is a nuance, but I think it's a little different question. And just to respond to Robert's comment, I think this is obvious that it's a limited sample, it's 44 people, but I think some information is better than no information, and I don't see how this is going to come back to bite anybody. It's information, and if people don't like some of the responses or the conclusions, you can say it's just 44 people.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who like it, they can say it's 44 people. It's better than nothing, I think. It's of limited value by the number, but it's
right. You know, I'm curious, just because, as Robert mentioned, there may be greater benefit in having a large project like the census conducted that's a little bit more scientifically rigorous than just this kind of temperature check that we did. But I do want to ask the question of everybody and get all of your input really quickly. How do you feel? I know Robert had said that he didn't see there was value, but what do others think? Yeah, Bill.
I feel like...
if you could, sorry. Use the microphone.
Got it. I feel like the survey needs to be sent to people who pay their water bill. I think the idea of having a survey on the watershed on certain days, on certain times of the day,
mm-hmm.
Is not going to really give us the broad results that we would like to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree, 44 people in a survey, it's kind of the mood of the day.
Right.
So I would love to see it if there could be a more formal survey that could be mailed to water district ratepayers who are ultimately going to have the most to say about whether e-bikes should be allowed in the watershed and should be included in that decision.
Thank you.
I don't agree with that. I think that's a bit of an overkill, and I think a lot of the people who respond on the bills, they don't use the watershed. They may never use the watershed, and I think that would be just as unfair. I think a more significant to do it again, maybe in better weather or whatever, different times. It doesn't have to be, you know, huge like the original one. I think that would be more fair, but no on the water bills.
I would just remind everyone, you know, we did follow what Marin County Parks had done and when they were doing their e-bike test ride, and what we found Colorado had done when they were evaluating this issue was kind of this informal survey just to get some information about their users, right? So let's remember the intent was to just bring some of those thoughts into this room. It wasn't meant to be a statistically significant study. And then just the only other point I wanted to share was the watershed aides who carried out this survey work, when they came back, they were you know, really surprised that all the users they interacted with were really appreciative that they got the opportunity just to provide some input to this. And they appreciated that people were out on the watershed collecting that information. So that's just some feedback that we got from the users that we did encounter out there.
You know, just go ahead.
Yes, Debbie.
So Sean was sort of getting at what I was thinking about, what's the purpose of the survey.
Mm-hmm.
So just to come back to some of the reading a little bit, that my big takeaway that I got from reading all these studies and the data is that the recommendations seem to be very heavily on the importance of educating the users, and that's what we're going to be hearing about later, and that is absolutely key for a decrease in impacts, because the impacts are from skidding and speeding and going off trail and all these bad behaviors. This is what the data seems to be showing. So for me, if I had limited resources that you were going to expend because you have conflicting, well, you have not conflicting, but you have competing priorities, I'd want to understand what the purpose of this survey is. How, I mean, to me, this, if it's to get at the fact of, are we at carrying capacity and we can't handle anymore, and we think that there's been this massive increase in bicycle uptake, and therefore, if the fear is that e-bikes is going to increase it further, and therefore mm-hmm. we're going to be over a carrying capacity, that's a very specific question. That is a legit question, and I would want to get the data to support it. I don't know that this attitudinal, I don't know what to do with this attitudinal survey.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it's interesting, but it's the question I feel like we're trying to figure out here is whether e-bikes should be on there, and if they are, how do we do it in a way that protects all the goals of Marin Municipal Water District?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that this survey answers either of those questions. It is very interesting. I just, because I agree that a sample size of 44, when I think about that, 3 days, 9 hours, 12 hours of staff time,
mm-hmm.
I'm assuming it's not a single staff person out there, maybe two. So let's say two staff people, 9 hours, over 4 days, they got 44 people. And if we average that out, that's 11 people per day per 3 hour period.
Mm-hmm.
So that's two people per hour. I mean, it's just a lot of time for very few people. And granted, when you look at the usage patterns, October is a very low use. We should all go out on Mother's Day and take this. Mm-hmm. But that's not feasible either, because that our timing doesn't fit very well into the timing of use. So I just would love to hear from the group, if you want it, what are you taking away from this survey that is helping you answer the question we need?
Before you jump in, sorry, I'll make this. I mentioned it during the last meeting, and we were hoping to discuss it after the next presentation as well. The more that we've looked into the issue, specifically of impacts of e-bikes, there is not. I feel fairly confident saying at this point that there's not rigorous academic research done on this specific topic. For that reason, the thinking behind the survey, at least, was to do an informal survey of user attitudes towards e-bikes within the watershed, but it can't provide the kind of quantitative scientific data that I think a couple of you are asking for. And if that's not useful, that's really helpful.
Yeah, here's where I think I come out subject to further discussion.
Sure.
I think Sean's point is the best reason to keep doing this, which is to get the public part of the process.
Thinking about it.
I think overall, though, that's probably not important enough, given the other ways we're getting the public involved, like us being here as the task force. But if we do it again, what I'm most interested in, not that I have a completely open mind on this topic, but what I'm most interested in is, are there actual problems that are being caused by bikers or e-bikers? Because the only way I would change my mind is if e-bikers are running over people and hurting them. You know, short of that, when you ask somebody, will e-bikes encourage new recreation? We know the answer to that. It's yes. Will they do more damage to the natural surface? That's a scientific matter, and I really don't put much weight on what the man on the hill or the woman on the mountain, you know, says about that without some scientific support for it. The next one, does it keep bikers riding longer? We know the answer to that. It's yes. More likely to create conflicts. You know, I talked about that. I want to know specifics. Reduce automobile traffic, yes. And you go right down the list. Mm-hmm. We know the answer to these questions. The only one we don't know is the overall question, do people think e-bikes should be permitted? And that's just, you know, what they think. And to me, on that, you know, let's say 50% of the people came back and said, we don't think e-bikes should be allowed. For just speaking for myself, that would not change my mind unless they supported that by something more than just their preference that they want to keep the mountain for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Debbie, the way you put it is right. How are we going to use, what information do we want that's going to help us?
Right.
And as I say, just to conclude, the information I want is, what is the incident? Well, two things, you know, the carrying capacity, and is there really any thought that we're, you know, close to an overcrowded situation? And related to that is, are we e-bikers causing problems for people? And just one last thing. I was up on the mountain today, and it was slowed down when I came upon one of the rare horses that I see up there. And the lady said, you know, you don't have to slow down for me. My horse, you know, doesn't care. And I said, you know, half jokingly, I'm not slowing down for the horse. I'm slowing down for me. You know, I don't want to run into somebody.
So neither of you were typical.
Well, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. But okay. So that's my view.
Sure. Number of hands up here. Let me go to Jonathan, then over to Peter, and back to Bill. Jonathan.
I like this discussion about the use of data. I think this is, it's almost like a black hole, and reminds me of two other places of data that people have tried to compile information on. One of them is, for example, those who go without legal representation. And the best studies I found are about 3,000 people a year in Marin. But the way you go about finding that is kind of difficult. It's like a little black hole. Another one is human trafficking. The studies on that are rather actually the estimates that are used. And here's the point. The estimates that are used on that are 20 years old. And there are 50 nonprofits that spend upwards or get billions of dollars a year to talk about that. And the actual numbers are very, very low. So this is a similar sort of exercise. How many people on e-bikes, how many people are causing problems, and so on. And I would urge that we try to find some way that we could look at these figures, try to get some research that we have, some numbers that we can rely on. Because I don't want to abuse them like human trafficking nonprofits do. And I don't want to, and I have a kind of a vested interest in terms of those people who have to represent themselves legally, because at the law library, more than half the people come in aren't lawyers. They're representing themselves. And that's all that we know. We know something about demographics, and we don't know whether their issues are triage or whether it's something that they can actually do something on their own, or whether they really need a lawyer. So I would want to dig down into this before I used any numbers to actually help us make a decision.
Thank you. Peter, and then over to Bill. Peter.
Well, maybe my voice will work or not. Can you hear me?
Yeah, thank
you. Okay. Well, I think that, you know, some of our comments, well, then a lot of it reflects, you know, misunderstands what the proposal for doing this informal survey. I understand it as the only thing that you could do in this way was to call a temperature survey, just to get a real-world actual sampling of the range of different things that people might say. Because, you know, you have to do something fairly extensive at lots of different hours of greater use to actually get any, you know, some kind of information. And so we're just trying to find out, I mean, you know, each one of us, a lot of times, we can actually survey. I've run into
If you could the, just speak a little closer to the mic, that'd be great.
I've run into the Marin County Parks and Open Space. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank
I turned
you
it off.
Much.
I've run into the Marin County Open Parks and Open Space when they were set up and doing a survey. And I think most people did stop, because if they're on the trail, they see that it's there and they want to, you know, kind of say something. I mean, at least when I've been going by. And then also, I guess, as everybody who goes on the mountain will know, there are certain times of the week when there's lots of people. I mean, there's some place, there's some times where it's, I mean, in the summertime, of course, on Mount Tam, it's almost overwhelmed. Not overwhelmed, but I mean, there are a lot of people. And so I don't think either the purpose of our advisory committee or survey is to come up with a vote on, even though we might have one attitude or another, to have a voting on whether e-bikes are absolutely good or bad, or whether you like it or not. I mean, we're trying to advise about different aspects of it and try to hone in on it, you know. So that's my input.
Thanks. So, go ahead, Bill.
My question would be for Ranger Petisic. You probably more than anyone in the room, being out in the water district and being involved with other rangers, would know for a fact whether or not there have been increased incidents of e-bike problems over regular bicycle problems in the last several years. Because I know that e-bikes have been on the mountain for at least the last 4 years. And I wonder if you could comment on that.
I can comment, but I can only comment on what's been reported. So we receive reports from time to time regarding e-bikes. It's more likely than not, it's e-bikes when they're rarely on a trail and they run into a hiker, an equestrian, and not run into them, but they cross paths. We haven't had any substantiated claims. And what I mean by that is we haven't had anyone file a report, and we haven't been able to move forward with anything involving a suspect, which can be tough in general, even when it's regular bikes out on trail. But what I can say is that there hasn't been an increase in those types of reports to our office. And the actual ratio of reports that we have received, when you're talking about people calling in and complaining about a regular bike going fast versus an e-bike going fast, I think is probably about the same ratio as you find regular bikes versus e-bikes out on the watershed. Mm-hmm. This is just offhand, off the cuff for me right now. I can go back and I can take a look at our numbers a little bit more in depth on reports that we've received and things of that nature. But just off the cuff and things that get reported while I am on duty, things that I see when I'm out around Lake Lagunitas or some of these other areas where you get a lot of bike interaction with visitor groups, I would say the ratios are pretty similar in terms of reports and issues that we have received.
If possible, so the next meeting, the topic of the next meeting was intended to be safety issues. And I'm just wondering, you know, if we can take a closer look at some of those incident reports. If that's possible, I think that'd be really helpful.
Absolutely. You know, Sean,
I saw a number of hands up.
Combined with that question, if I might add, I would also like to know what the number of incidents of dogs off leash are. Because that has been a real, as a bicyclist, that has been a real problem for me.
Specific to e-bikes? I want to make sure that as much as possible we're keeping the focus very narrowly on e-bikes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I just, I've been thinking.
Sorry to shut you down.
But I've been thinking about that issue, and let me just pose this. If we go back with some kind of educational program, you know, further interaction with the public, like, I guess, the next topic, the slow and say hello. It seems to me maybe we ought to just think about, instead of just having something that's on e-bikes, we have something that's broader. Because I do think, I mean, what scares me when I'm on the mountain is dogs off leash. Because you're riding, not fast, you're riding within the speed limit, and there's a dog, and it starts to come at you. The owner knows that it's not going to do anything to you. You don't know it, and it scares the heck out of you.
Well,
but
we're not here for that.
What I can speak to just about that point is dogs off leash are illegal on the watershed. We do cite for them; they're not allowed. So, as when it comes to an issue with we're talking about now with e-bikes versus the dogs off leash and they're scary when you're running facing them off leash as you're biking by. They are illegal. We do cite for them. When we do see it, we do respond to incidents in that regard. So I don't know that it's a great relationship to what we're talking about and what the focus of this topic is.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
When you said ratio, what ratio were you talking about?
When I was speaking about incidents, I was talking about the same ratio of that we have found how many bikes on the mountain are e-bikes versus that I see that are e-bikes versus ones that I see that are regular bikes. That's about the same ratio of complaints that we get. So e-bikes versus, yeah, it's not a disproportionate. We're not getting a disproportionate amount of e-bike related reports versus a compared to the regular mountain biking complaints that we get.
Sierra.
The way I look at it, can you guys hear me?
Please.
Talking close enough. Bikes are bikes, and humans are humans. And youth are younger people or younger people. And it's like, I think as we get a little bit older, we might get a little bit less hot-headed. But the problem isn't the bikes. It's not the horses. It's not the cars. The problem is the humans. It comes down to education. And, you know, I got to say, I think the problem is humans off-leash.
Nice.
Because, I mean, that's what's running all of it. But anyway, in terms of the survey, surveys are problematic. I mean, whether you send it out with the bill as an online survey or whatever, and you get 200 people like answering the survey question from one place and then nobody else doing it, it's all skewed. The problem is you've got opinion and you've got data.
You talk a little bit closer to the mic.
You've got opinion and you have data.
Right.
And we've all got our opinions and our beliefs. And I mean, look at the national. We're all fighting over beliefs. Nobody ever examines the beliefs. It's all like whatever the heck we, you know, learned or got programmed with in diapers for the most part. But where do we find or create any of the data that is actual user data? And how can we find anything? What's happening elsewhere that actually works? What is anybody anywhere in the world doing that has groups of people in an area where they're actually getting along and things are working? And how, I mean, to me, I think it all comes down to education.
Mm-hmm.
Education and enforcement. And if you're going to have enforcement that works, then it's got to have to be like sane regulation too, or else people aren't going to follow it. But, you know, still it comes back down to humans off leash or unhinged or whatever. And just
so that, you know, joking is... Right. Well, joking aside, that actually kind of leads to the final discussion that we were hoping to have before we switch
over. I wasn't joking.
Huh?
I wasn't joking.
Please don't try to put me on a leash. It won't work out well for anyone.
Well, I mean, you know, not metaphysically, but metaphorically or whatever. I mean, just, you know, unhinged, unleashed, whatever.
Of course. But, you know, that begs the question. There's clearly varying opinions on the usefulness of this informal survey and whether we should continue to do it. So I think we can, you know, I'll discuss that with staff and we'll let you know what decision is made from there. But that raises the broader question about what data do you actually need to start formulating recommendations, to Debbie's point, Roberts, and others. So you have two meetings left, specific to kind of presentations on the topics that we discussed right at the outset of this. The next one is on safety issues related to e-bikes, and the final sort of presentation meeting is on regulations, enforcement, and education. From there, we kind of transition in your last two meetings to the actual formulation of recommendations, and I think it gets to Sierra's point earlier about how this group wants to communicate to actually go through that exercise. But what we need to hear from all of you, knowing that there isn't academic research on this subject, and there is certainly no research specific to this watershed on the impacts of e-bikes, what information do all of you need that can be produced in that timeline, or what do you need to see in order to start that conversation around the recommendations that you'll propose to the district and its board? So I'd like to spend a couple minutes on that. What presentations haven't you heard yet that you really think you need to, and what additional data can come to bear? I'll just remind everybody there is the Google Doc that's increasing. I know, Bill, you were going to send me some information to post. Others have been posting materials up there as well, so I'd encourage you to look at that. But in these meetings and with members of the public here, what would you like to hear from us to make your jobs a little easier?
I'd be curious if there's any data on education signage or how, like, people's behavior changes mm-hmm. with signage and how people get along, if it's, like, somehow made clear to people before they, you know, ride their bike over from San Francisco and Sausalito on an e-bike and they're just here partying. If we can have big signs of some sort at the access points to the watershed that say, hey, this is the watershed. If you're going to use it, these are the rules. It's like ride your bike, but, you know, watch out for everybody else. I mean, one pet peeve I have is I'd love everybody to have a friggin' bell, excuse my language. Bikes are, it's like, anyway, just let people know you're there and it takes care of 90% of the issues. You startle people and it's a problem.
That's great. Other suggestions? Yeah, Gail.
I'd like to know what kind of coverage the Water District does provide, can provide, because as you're talking about people off leash, everything to me seems about coverage too.
When you say coverage, are you?
Rangers per however you measure, how many rangers you have out on the shed on the weekend, weekdays,
do you
stuff
mean
like that.
Enforcement?
Because I know, yeah, because I know enforcement is difficult, and I don't know how many rangers you have, but I just still think it's about enforcement and what you can realistically provide.
You know, related to that, one thing I'd be interested in is when we talked, you know, at other meetings, other forums about volunteers as monitors, that kind of thing, to supplement the rangers. Somebody raised a legal question about whether that imposes liability on the district or something like that. I'd be interested in from you all what kind of limitations there might be on use of volunteers to help enforce or educate. Because I think we could get a lot of people to, you know, be monitors on weekends.
You can monitor, but you can't do anything except tell someone they're going too fast and maybe get out of the way if they are going too fast. That's all you could do is slow them down. And I think probably for your volunteer program, what you probably have insurance like we do at China Camp. There's a coverage for volunteers in case we fall on our heads or whatever we do.
But, I mean, they may not be a complete answer, but I think it might be a step. It's worth considering.
Yeah, it's more monitoring, yeah.
You wouldn't recommend pellet gun or anything? No.
Please, no. I don't want to make much worse problems.
I would like to see some real data on maybe the number of incidents that the Rangers might be observing or responding to relative to all of the user groups, from the folks that ride horses or hike or ride bikes, or, you know, the bird watchers are not usually much problem, but the dog watchers are a real hazard to us. And I don't mean to pick on them, but I'm just saying, if you want to look for something that is an accident waiting to happen, mm-hmm. A dog off leash and a bicyclist coming along, whether they're an e-biker or a kid on a bike, can create a real problem. So I would like some accurate Ranger data as to exactly what kind of incidents you're observing on the mountain and within the watershed of any user group that we might utilize in our decision.
Actually, it's very timely. We are at the end of the calendar year, and we do summarize year-end data on our Ranger in terms
that'd be
of
great.
Citations for this or that, and response, search and rescue, how many we did for the year, et cetera. So, yeah, we could provide that data.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yes, Debbie.
So to pick up on what Sierra said, I would really, and I don't know when this comes in, but I would really like to know what other creative ways people have come up with to decrease the problems with interaction, whether it's alternative days or better signage or whatever it is. So that kind of example would be helpful.
Sedatives.
The other thing, I'm having a hard time with this question because I wish Nona were here. When I look at some of the letters that MCL has written, they assert worries. They assert problems that mm-hmm. they have fears about. And they feel, it feels to me that those are very sincere fears about increased, people going farther in the watershed, more people being on the watershed, faster uphill. And those aren't problems for me, but if they're going to be, if people on this committee are worried about that, then I would like them to get data on that, you know. And then if the only way to get that data is to do a deep survey of increased use over time, and there's a cost to that survey and a time to the survey, then we can do a cost-benefit analysis on doing it. It's not an issue for me, but I feel like that's been an issue that's been raised, and the folks aren't here, at least Nona's not here to ask for it. Yeah. So I'd just be curious what she feels like the data she needs to ease her fear, if it's possible.
The other thing is, maybe you covered this last meeting. Mm-hmm. I was not able to attend. But the other complaint that we hear, and it's usually, I think, at a pretty high level of generalization, is the environmental impact.
Mm-hmm.
There's more erosion. It's going to deteriorate the water supply and so forth.
Yeah.
And, if that's still an issue.
Well, that's okay.
For one, I would hate to recommend more usage on the mountain if it's actually going to deteriorate the water supply.
Right.
And I'm assuming that the water district has experts on that, and they can just.
You missed a meeting that we did.
Has that been resolved? Or?
I can say with a fairly high degree of certainty that information on the added erosive potential of e-bikes does not exist, at least not academic research.
The takeaway that I got was that the roads are built for big heavy machinery. And
right.
Things that weigh like I don't know how many tons, and yes, bicycle tires are this big and we cause some erosion, but compared to what the water district needs are for being able to haul around fire trucks and water everything, our bikes aren't doing much.
That's the assumption, certainly, but again, research beyond that hasn't. Yes, Debbie.
Except, I mean, this was the thing I wanted to bring up, is on this report by Mistakis. Mm-hmm. They both reports actually refer to this curvilinear response,
mm-hmm.
and it's actually going to be very relevant to your question. So when we get to that point, that's what convinced me that it's not a problem on mm-hmm. soils. That was my biggest concern.
Yeah.
And when I read that And both reports talk about statistically seeing that, mm-hmm. which means that the biggest impact is right after you build the road,
mm-hmm.
and that the response after that is much less because that's not where the big impact is because of what Sierra said. So I'm sorry, now we're getting in, we're diverting, but I was just responding to Robert.
No, I appreciate that. And again, just encourage folks to review the materials that are posted to the Google Doc and that were handed out last time. If you'd like a hard copy,
okay.
we can get those to you. The one issue that I'll state, again, both of those are written by advocacy organizations, and I know that folks on the other who may have differing points of opinion have raised concerns about both of those documents. So again, it comes down to credible academic research that's, you know, quote unquote, more objective than some of the other ones.
Because just one last thought on this. What I was thinking was, you know, it's conceivable that there's a road that's right by like Phoenix Lake or Lagunitas
sure.
Lake, and if there's more erosion, that can have some effect.
Mm-hmm.
I usually ride up Fish Grade and Rock Springs,
mm-hmm.
and I don't see anybody, and it's so far from the lake. And today I was asking myself, you know, am I causing a problem by riding up here? And I just couldn't fathom that I was, but if I'd like some support for that, and maybe
sure.
it's in the stuff you've already done. But let me put it this way. If the Water District, you know, has some data or some scientific basis to think that e-bikes or regular bikes or hikers or whatever – you know, are materially contributing to lessening of the water supply or the quality of the water, we ought to know about that.
Sure. All right. Thank you all for that. Robert, we'll give you the last word, and then we need to transition to the next
sure.
presentation.
Sure.
Go ahead.
So I've been here multiple months, multiple meetings, and I keep waiting for the Water District resource staff to offer up information about the flora and the fauna that live on the watershed. I've had nobody on this committee has mentioned that, except somebody mentioned a lizard needing to get out of the way of a speeding bike. I would like to see all of the current district's projects and plans and reports posted someplace so we can talk about the tens of thousands of species of flora and fauna on the watershed. If we're regarding this whole topic as being painted on a blank canvas, it's simply some dirt out there, and we're trying to decide if we can ride bikes on it, and we're not thinking about the watershed,
mm-hmm.
We've got a problem. And I introduced myself last time as somebody who is unaligned. Clearly, somebody's going to have to align themselves with the things that live out there. And I hope that the district would stick up for it. It's theirs. But if not, I will do that myself.
So you'd like to hear...
I'd agree with that. But I'd also like to say this is just more e-bikes as opposed to regular bikes. And I don't know there's really much difference between an e-bike and a regular bike when it comes to flora and fauna.
Wait.
Yeah.
So while we've done rare plant studies and wildlife inventories, I think the most specific document that might help with what you're asking is the EIR that was prepared for the road and trail master plan to the impact that would be to, you know, flora and fauna on the roads from any uses. So we can make that available through Google Docs, yeah.
Yeah, and that was available and presented at the last meeting when we reviewed it.
And
but we have to remember that we are talking about roads that are driven on for vehicles for operation in the watershed. So that is part of the reason in this discussion why kind of some of the resource issues haven't been brought in. Yes, we have a lot of reports on rare plant monitoring that's ongoing, invasive plant monitoring, vegetation management that we're doing. But what we're talking about here is, as Sierra mentioned, bicycles and e-bikes on, you know, fire roads where there is vehicle traffic from the Water District's vehicles maintaining those. So we're not talking about building new facilities. So that's not a new impact to the watershed. We're not talking about going and allowing any use in an area where we have rare or sensitive species. And we're talking about, you know, existing facilities.
Right. Again, though, the EIR is available on the Google Drive as well. I would encourage folks to look through at least the impact section of that. With that, and looking at the time, I do want to I do think we need to go ahead and transition. So at this point, Tom Voss and Kurt are here from Safe Trails Marin. So let me hand it over. Add the down button.
And please use the microphone for folks that need it.
Yeah, you want to sit down? Hold on. We just got to get it to show for you.
Remote control work.
It's on the wrong PowerPoint.
While they're solving the technical issues, my name's Kurt Kruger. I was with the Marin Horse Council at the time that Trail Partners was created. Trail Partners is a collaboration of the Marin Horse Council, the Marin Conservation League, and MCBC. And it was created to address just the issue that Debbie was asking about, which is user conflict and resource protection. The presentation that we're about to show was created before e-bikes became an issue, so it doesn't address the issue that this group is created for, but it does address the issue of various user groups on the trails. So to kind of frame what this is all about, I'm going to show a 3-minute video. Step out of the way and let the video talk for itself.
The biggest change I've seen is a lot more use generally across the disciplines and the advent of bikes out on the trails and fire roads.
My name is John McConnellog, and I'm a ranger with the Marin Municipal Water District.
Rich Peterson, and I'm here representing the Tamalpais High School mountain biking team.
My name is Suzanne Gooch, and I'm out here representing the equestrian community.
I'm Katie Rice. I'm a Marin County supervisor. I represent the Ross Valley, and I'm also a Marin County native. Grew up in Mill Valley and have hiked and ridden horses and biked and taken my dog all over the trails and fire roads of this great open space for the last half century.
Well, I think it's a great campaign to bring awareness to the challenges we have of shared use on the trails. And the Slow to Say Hello campaign is great because it reinforces this idea that you have to be able to slow down enough to be able to say hello to somebody as you pass by. And it's amazing when the kids do that, it really diffuses things on the trail.
I want to say, a few years ago, our bike community, our hiking community, our equestrian community, members of those communities that really saw the need to raise the bar in terms of how we interact out on the trails and came up with this collaborative idea and brought it to the County of Marin and the Marin County Marin Parks and Open Space to get behind a campaign that's about building courtesy and community out on the trails.
I've been a part of Slow and Say Hello as a representative of the Water District as part of the public outreach. It's been fantastic. I think it's been great to see not only the agencies and the user groups working together, but more important than that is it really is helpful to the public and helping to see the message get out to the public. And I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand in a lot of these busy areas where we see a more higher traffic. Especially Phoenix Lake, Lake Lagunitas, but we've seen an improvement with relations between different user groups on the mountain.
Really stunning how much the hiking and biking community appreciated getting to understand horses and equestrians out on the trails.
I actually did not know that horses didn't perceive riders the same way that they perceive pedestrians or hikers, so it was a real thing to learn, and ever since then I've gone out of my way to stop and get off my bike whenever I encounter an equestrian and, you know, talk to them, or at least, you know, if I'm riding up slowly to them, I talk to them first before the horses get skittish and ask the riders if it's okay to ride by.
I can feel it out there, and I've been walking these hills and trails for decades.
How many of you up above and below, or maybe I shouldn't use those words, on my right and on my left, have seen a Slow and Say Hello outpost? Hands? Okay, so there's a reasonable coverage. It didn't start out that way. 6 years ago, 7 years ago, the three groups on the slide all pretty much saw each other at various supervisors meetings and board meetings and so forth, taking opposing views on things. And we decided that our three groups did have common interests, and we formed a collaboration where we agreed to focus on our common interest. And when we are working together, when we're trail partners, when we're doing this, we're focused on safety and resource protection. The issues that we disagreed on were not discussed. And outside of that room, we were free to keep going the way we had been going for years. But while we were together, resource protection and safety was the primary purpose.
Did you find that your arguing over other stuff outside of that room lessened?
It was interesting. Yes, it did. However, within each of our three groups, there was not unanimous support for what we were doing. Each of our three groups had to face a minority who didn't want anything to do with the collaboration because they considered the others to be the enemy. Now, that was a few years back, and times have changed, and our success, I think, has lessened the disagreements within the group. So we endeavored to figure out how we're going to solve a problem. We came together on the heels of a significant nasty accident, injuries, hospitalization, that sort of thing, and we didn't want to just go out and put signs up and do things that would be gone a month after the accident faded in people's memories. We really wanted to change behavior, shift the culture, and we realized that education was the key to doing that. We also understood that here in Marin, we've got five major land managers. And of course, as many of you know, you all agree with the other four land managers all the time, right? No. Each of the five land managers have their own sets of policies, their own rules, their own way of doing things. And to the public, most people have no idea when they cross from the water district to state parks to GGNRA back to open space. It's all seamless. So we had to come up with something that would work across all these lines. And we began our meetings. We took about 2 years to come up with a program. The first year we developed trust among the three of us. We had pretty wide-ranging freewheeling meetings, but what it came down to was, how do we change behavior? Can we do it? Well, we did some academic-type research, and what you see is the distribution chart, the bell curve, and this is actually from an EPA document, but the left side of the curve shows the people. It's shown there as the show me. If you tell people what to do, they'll do it. And some percentage of people fall into that category and will do it. Off on the right, the make me group, they're the ones who will only respond to enforcement. Perhaps the largest group, the middle one, the help me group, they want to do the right thing. And if they know what the right thing is, they will do it. But just putting a sign out there isn't enough. Linda Dahl, who was instrumental in getting us started with all of this, tells a story about Yosemite, where there were birds nesting in a meadow, and they put out signs saying, no picnicking, keep out. And everybody ignored them. And she came back and added two words to it, birds nesting. keep out birds nesting, and the violation stopped. So she was appealing to that middle group. As long as they understood the meaning or the purpose behind the regulations, they would obey it. So we made the decision in our group that we would focus on the two left-hand groups, the Show Me and the Help Me group. And through education, we would improve user conflict resolutions. A side benefit is when the majority of people are obeying the rules, it creates peer pressure among the user groups to reduce the numbers in the Make Me group. So how do we change behavior? So the naysayers said, well, you can't do that. You never change behaviors. Does anybody know who Candy Leitner is?
I'm sorry, say that again. Who?
Candy Leitner. Candy Leitner was a woman in Southern California whose daughter was killed by a drunk driver in the early 70s. Now, I'm old enough to remember what it was like starting drinking back before Candy Leitner came on the scene. And there was no designated driver. There was no societal onus or bad news types of things on drinking and driving. You just had to be careful. I was actually stopped by a policeman when I was in college and had too much to drink, and he told me to drive slowly and be careful. Well, Candy Leitner went up against the entrenched beer and alcohol and the culture. And she created Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And today, everybody knows what a designated driver is. The laws have changed. The whole attitude toward drinking and driving has changed. Has the problem gone away completely? No. But the culture changed. So it is possible to change the culture. And we looked at a number of other examples as well. So over the course of our couple years of work, we came up with what we called some key findings or aha moments. First of all, and this is probably very, very important, people who are within a user group, whether it's equestrians, bicycles, joggers, they don't understand the needs of other groups. They don't know what makes things safe. So, for example, to many people, especially the joggers or the fast-moving, that's horses, bicycles, and so forth, to them, an incident occurs when somebody goes to the doctor or there's blood or there's some kind of collision. Well, that's part of it. That is one case of an incident. But another case is when an elderly person or a mom with a kid or somebody else on the trail doesn't feel safe. A jogger whizzes by them or a mountain biker goes past them and they kind of jump out of the way. And what do? They don't report that. They don't talk to the rangers about it. They just don't come back. You've got displacement. So safety is perceived safety. Users must feel safe on the trail or they won't go out on the trail. So one of the themes we came up with is put yourself in my shoes. We developed targeted messages for each of the user groups written by people within that user group. Responsibilities, expectations, and education. Active communication between individual trail users promotes safety. Well, what do we mean by that? Well, we recognize that most hikers, when they pass each other, say hi or whatever. They nod, they respond to each other. And faster moving users typically don't do that or not nearly as often. Unlike in a motor vehicle where you have kind of rules of the road, you have predictable highway design, you have good sight lines, you have licensed drivers, and you can't talk to each other. None of those things exist on the trail. On the trail, every user has the ability to communicate directly with the other users. So having active communication helps make the situation safe. It diffuses any kinds of issues. And if there are specific circumstances for a particular person on that trail, active communication takes care of it. Here's an example. A hiker is walking up the trail. A jogger comes up behind them. The jogger yells, "On your right." Now, I'm a skier, so I know what that means. Most hikers, our experience is about 50% of them don't know what that means. So they hear "on your right," and the word right focuses in their mind, so they move to the right. Bingo. Collision. So that's not active communication. Yelling out something to somebody else is not active communication. Active communication is an exchange. And it doesn't have to be words. It can be a nod or something of that sort. But it's a communication back and forth. So when passing, interact with each other to establish what is safe at that moment and at that place on the trail. And this is probably key. This is where slow and say hello really comes into play. I've had discussions. I had one earlier this evening about which side you should pass on, and uphill and downhill, and who is the right of way, and all of those sorts of things. Much of that kind of thinking comes from our experience with automobiles. And again, the things that dictate how we react to each other on a highway don't really apply on a trail. So establish at that moment, based on terrain, circumstance, the horse you're riding, the bike you're riding, whoever's with you, how many people are in your group, establish the safe way to have that interaction. So, for example, if you read much of the published literature, bicyclists encounter a horse on the trail, the bicyclists are supposed to stop, get off to the side, and the horse goes by. Well, an example I use, we had a horse on our ranch that only had one eye. So that particular situation would have been very dangerous if that particular horse tried to pass those bikes on that side. So how do you get rid of it? How do you make that a safe thing? You talk to each other. You establish what's safe at that moment. The other thing that many people don't realize about horses, they don't perceive a person on a bicycle as a person on a bicycle. They perceive it as some kind of scary thing, and they're prey animals. They react. So their concern is, wow, I don't know what that is, and I better run away because it might attack me like a mountain lion. Well, when you start talking as a bike rider, that calms the horse down. The horse understands, oh, it's actually a person. So talking humanizes all the interaction, makes everything a much safer deal. In this particular case, the next, on the lower right, a couple horses saw several people on bikes coming, and they decided to stop and get off to the side. It made more sense, because there were several bikes there, than to have the bikes all stop. You have to establish, based on what's happening in that situation, the best way to handle it. Some situations, some encounters, just have no preconceived way to handle it. And some can say, well, that's an exception. Well, almost everything that happens on the trail is an exception. So in this case, I couldn't find a good photo that really told the story, but we had a woman who was injured on a horse. She was riding up behind our stable, and a hiker was coming down, and she had a big flowery hat and a backpack, and she didn't want to scare the two riders. So she stood behind a tree. And people have a peripheral vision of about this much. Horses, as prey animals, can see this much. So when the horse and rider got past the tree, the horse saw this scary thing with this giant hat and spun around, and the woman broke her arm. So the hiker was trying to do the right thing, didn't want to scare anybody, and ended up causing an injury. So the proper thing would have been to, hi there, I'm on the trail. And the people on the horse would say, oh good, are there any people behind you? They'd establish what the circumstances are and then create a safe situation. So that's how Slow and Say Hello came about. We developed some literature. We have a threefold handout. Each of the three panels was written by the hiker, the equestrian, and the mountain biker. The hiker portion was basically Nona's from MCL. The equestrian part came from the Marin Horse Council, and MCBC contributed. And we didn't just do this in isolation. We worked together on it. The other side of the panel, if you look on the left, I really like this. It says, you are a visitor in wildlife's home. And that's flora and fauna. So I'm going to have Tom talk about how we are getting the message out and what we've done over the past few years.
Good evening, everybody. So we created this brochure.
Who are you?
I'm Tom Boss. I represent the Marin County Bicycle Coalition on the Trail Partners. And so we created this brochure, and you can see it's been distributed through a number of different places, through parks, through stores, and other places where recreationalists are going to gather. But we wanted to get out into the parks and start communicating with the users, with the different folks. So we created this Slow and Say Hello campaign. We call them the Outposts, Slow and Say Hello Outposts. And we basically partner with all of Marin's land managers, and we set these up at popular entry points in generally from the spring through the fall. And we interact with the users, and I'll explain that in a second. But to set these up, there's also a lot of collaboration. So we have to work with, in this case, we're on Mount Tam, so we were working with MMWD. We also partnered with OneTam. They brought out the their roving ranger, which draws the kids and the families in. This was up at Phoenix Lake, and we have actually Nona there in the shot. One of the Jack Gibson, one of the board directors of MMWD, was at that event. This was on Horse Hill with Marin County Open Space, partnering with Horse Hill, and this was actually a twofer where we were interacting with the public, and we also had volunteers out pulling broom, kind of part of that resource, part of our mission, resource protection. What you see here is a table where we basically encourage people, draw people in, and we give them a quiz. And there's generally some cool prizes on the table that also entice people to come over. And they take the quiz, we give them one of the items. So now I'm going to give you all a chance to win a prize. Here's I have two examples of some of the questions we ask, and I'll explain why what these are triggered to do. So when approaching a horse,
oh yes, Tom, sure. What's the prize?
There's a few. Okay. You're not sure if you're going to compete.
I want to figure out how hard I should work.
Give you the shirt off my back.
They're generally branded items, but we have we're pretty good. We have three different choices for the head, and I've got a bike bell. Somebody mentioned that. We promote everybody should have a bell on their bike and maybe on their dog, and we have little bags and so forth. But the question here, you approach a rider while on a bike on a trail, on which side should you pass?
Tuesday.
Tuesday? It's interesting, but not. Anybody?
Well, if,
yes.
if rider.
I
follow the question, if to follow the question, you should ask the rider. Hi there. Which side should I pass?
Very good. This is these questions are designed to create a dialogue and where we talk about ultimately. We don't know, right? It could be the right side or it could be the left, as we heard earlier. So communicate with the other user, ask them what they would like you to do. So what would you like?
CBD.
I would get the hat. I'll take the shirt off Kurt's back.
Take the shirt off Kurt's back. Okay. Another question.
No, I'm teasing, please. It'll be too big for me. Please.
So you encounter, you're on a trail, hiking, walking, or riding a horse. There's a puddle across the entire width of the trail. Do you go over or through it, or do you go around it?
Well, through it.
Well, I think it depends how old you are.
You can swim.
And how deep it is.
So the younger you are, the more in contact with a puddle you will come.
You go through it.
So I'll get a prize.
My front wheel stopped in a puddle one time, and I went flying.
And went over the bars.
Yeah.
You go around it, right?
Well, that's what a lot of people say, but then you're just creating a bigger impact. You're widening the trail. So we generally encourage you to go through it if you're a horse or a bike, or to hop over it if you can. But going around is possibly expanding an impact on the habitat.
How about the more common situation where you're on a fire road and there are some hikers, more common for a biker at least, hikers either across the road or on the right side, and you're coming up behind them. what are you supposed to do?
I think most people follow just the rules of the road, where you stay to the right and you pass to the left. But again, we just encourage you to communicate. A lot of times, hikers have the right of way when you're on a bike, but sometimes it makes more sense for the hiker to step off the trail, and if that's what they choose to do, that's the right answer at that situation.
We have a training program called Tails and Tires. It was designed initially to teach the high school mountain bike kids safety around horses, but it expanded to include everyone. And one of the exercises we do is we basically teach people how to talk to each other on the trail. Sometimes you can't get kids to shut up, but they have trouble coming up and talking to adults sometimes. So you approach people from behind. Hi, I'm on a mountain bike. There's nobody behind me. Is it okay if I pass? Or, begin the dialogue, get people talking, and it's amazing how quickly you figure out what the right thing to do is.
Any other questions for Kurt or I, or Robert?
So I asked Kurt earlier, but I didn't wait around for an answer. Testing the effectiveness of the program, do you have goals that you've met, or do you have some way of quantifying your success? Is this simply a way to indicate that we're all involved and trying to do the right thing? I mean, it may be that there is no measure, but I wonder if you have one.
Well, I think our measure was when the question was asked if anybody had seen us out on the trails, and we saw a majority of the folks here have. It is a good question. We don't have a scientific metric, but we get a lot of feedback from both park folks and visitors, and that generally they're feeling that more people are slowing down and saying hi. So, but no scientific data to support that.
A couple years ago, Mike Swayze asked us to set up a safety zone, is that what he called them, around Lake Lagunitas, and we put up our displays and so forth, and he added signs as well. And at a presentation a year and a half ago, Mike said that he used to field complaints at Lake Lagunitas, and in the past 2 years after our program started, he hadn't had any. Now, again, that's anecdotal. All of the comments you heard in the opening video were anecdotal. So we've talked about metrics. We talked about hiring USF. They have some people who do this kind of research, but it hasn't been done yet.
Bill?
Well, I wanted to compliment you on this campaign, and I've observed you at Lake Lagunitas and several other places. What seems like it's been going on for several years now. The canopy, I think, maybe just the last couple of years. But I want to say that it has really made a difference amongst the mountain bikers that I ride with, because everybody slowed down. Everybody said hello. But it's also a shift in the them and us kind of thinking. And you realize that you have empathy for people who are out there with the dog going one direction and the two kids going the other direction, and you're approaching them on your mountain bike, and you slow down. And I think we assess the situation in front of us better than we used to, because we empathize with the situation of the other users, whether they're on a horse or a family out for a picnic or a large group of hikers, as we so often encounter. You start talking to the people in the back of the group, and eventually you get through them. But I think the campaign has been a great success, and I think this is really at the heart of how we're going to resolve the e-bike issues as well. So thank you both for this effort. I think it's a great job.
Agreed.
I do have a suggestion for your group going forward. I think I mentioned that user groups learn best from others in that same user group. So if you do come up with an education program for e-bikes, I would suggest that you have it rolled out by other people who ride bikes, as opposed to the rangers or whomever from the community. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo that. First of all, I thought your presentation's outstanding. It's really great. It's a great images, video, anecdotes. And I just want to say thank you very much for the work. I feel like our country needs more of this right now, and it's really encouraging to see such a positive example. So, thank you for coming tonight.
I concur with all of that, and Kurt, I just can't help ask you, what would you do with e-bikes from an education standpoint?
I'm here representing Trail Partners. So the limited conversation I had with the other Trail Partner groups was that e-bikes are motorized bikes, but no recommendation. When I take off this hat and I'm no longer representing the Slow and Say Hello campaign, I can give you my personal opinions, but this isn't the right venue for it.
Okay, thank you.
I look at this whole model and I just say, Happy Christmas. It's kind of like the only thing that's going to get humans to survive on this planet, period. Because, right, I mean, I look at, see what I see.
Yeah.
Jonathan, did you
The only thing I would remark, I thought it was an excellent presentation, particularly the personal, when you suggest personal interactions with the different groups and so on. But I really am surprised, not surprised, I'm glad you did the research that you did on the laggards and so on. So basically you're telling us that 15% of the population is a narcissistic personality disorder.
All right. Well, thank you very much to Tom and Kurt for that presentation. It was excellent. So we do want to shift gears here to public comment very quickly, but I just wanted to touch on a couple of things and remind you about our upcoming process moving forward. You'll remember we had a demo ride, e-bike demo ride scheduled. Many apologies, Mother Nature did not cooperate, and we'll need to reschedule that. I think in the email that we sent out, we have the date tentatively rescheduled for March 4th. So the idea is to get those who are interested onto an e-bike before you start talking about specific recommendations. So it hasn't slipped off the radar, but I did just want to bring that up again.
You let a little bit of rain stop you guys?
Yeah. Well, it's more... I think we probably would have heard about it if we let people pedal on wet, muddy trails and tear them up more. So anyway, I'm from Seattle. I love it myself. for the next meeting, your next topic, as I mentioned earlier, was e-bike and bike safety. We have a couple of suggestions already. I know, Brett, we spoke about getting some of the incident reporting information relative to all user groups. As I mentioned, that's sort of the second to last of the informational presentations. The final one, again, is going to be on regulations, enforcement, and educational opportunities. I thought that the Trail Partners presentation really summed up some potentially interesting ways to proceed with that, so just keep that in mind. A number of documents have been posted up on the Google Drive, as I've mentioned. Please do refer back to that and feel free to add anything that you'd like to. And for all of you, just periodically check in and flip through those. There's a growing body of information on there, much of which has been supplied by the district, but a number of you have posted things as well.
Do you have the dates of the next meetings?
Yes. So the next meeting will be on January 14th. And the February meeting, I don't know if you have it readily available. I can pull it up, though. I believe it's February 11th, but let me just confirm that. February 11th for that final informational presentation. So that still begs the question, how are we going to get all of you to communicate, and how offline, and how are we going to start putting recommendations together? I spoke to Sean a little bit right before we closed out here, and I think before the next meeting in the next couple of weeks, we'd like to get a proposal out to all of you to read through on, the actual process for putting some your ideas to paper. It's been my experience that brainstorming, especially in two-hour meetings, can often be a problematic exercise. So we want to actually produce some materials for all of you to look at. Chew over the holidays and provide us some thoughts. So, we'll work on getting something out to you immediately. But at this point, knowing that we are quickly approaching the hour, we do want to provide plenty of time for public comment. I think that we've received 3 comments so far. Just a reminder for folks in the audience, there's a green, a yellow, and a red light on the podium up here. Staff will be tracking the time, and when you have about 30 seconds left or so, the yellow light will turn on, and when you're out of time, the red light will turn on. We can go a little bit past the hour, but we do want to keep it to about 3 minutes with the comments we have right now. Crystal, I don't know. So Crystal's going to go ahead and read 2 names off. The first can go ahead and come up and deliver comment, and the second is sort of on deck.
Sean, just one quick note. If you're going to have a film, could you transcribe it or caption it? I didn't understand what that film is all about. Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll post it onto the website so that you can view it, and we can make a transcript of it.
Okay,
yeah,
thank you.
No problem.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Okay. First 2 names are Larry Minicus and then Matt Adams.
Good evening, all. How are you? It's a nice rainy evening. Okay, so Sam, the handouts that were the physical handouts. Oh, there you are. The physical handouts for from last month. You said those were going to be posted on the website. The IMBA and the another one that I didn't get a copy of, and they're not there. So could they be?
The documents handed out to the CAC. You know, some of those pieces were advocacy pieces or not directly produced by MMWD.
Correct.
Those are posted to an internal Google Doc for the CAC, but if there's a particular document you'd like to see, just let me know and we can make sure to get
Is it possible for the public to have access to the Google Docs, since this is a public process?
That's something that we have to discuss with staff.
Yeah, because I feel I would like those docs from last month, because I had numerous comments about them, if you recall.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, and you mentioned the National Park Service lawsuit. We're litigants. MCL, I'm speaking for MCL at this moment, but I'm not representing MCL this evening. We have standing. We joined it under that. I'm not a legal person, so I'm just saying we were asked. You have to have standing, legal standing, and so we declared standing on that lawsuit. So it's different than us actually.
I wasn't judging it, I had no knowledge.
No, but I just wanted to correct. It wasn't brought by MCL. I just thought that should be important. And there's been a lot of misinformation and misinterpretation of the documents that you received on the impacts. And let me explain. When you really get into these, there's 2 major things. There's the results, and there's the conclusions. And many times, the conclusions are different than the results. So what IMBA provided you with was a number of results, but they gave you the conclusion at the bottom of page 6. And that conclusion, as you read, said there's just not enough study out there to draw conclusions, that more study is needed. And when you read each one of these studies, as I was saying last time, that's what each one of them says, is that do not take this and extrapolate from this. This data is just for where we were at this particular time. So the impact of hoofs going up a trail in Kentucky has absolutely nothing to do with impacts here, because everything is different. And you've got to keep that in mind. So if you read something about Montana or British Columbia, you cannot extrapolate from that. That was under very specific conditions that study was done. There's just no way to take that and use it and put it to good use. And that's what the conclusions of these are. There's just so little study on the impacts of mountain bikes and such on natural surfaces. Also, with charts, I heard an interesting story on NPR, and it was an author, and I just looked it up, and it's the number one bestseller in communications. Charts Lie: Getting Smarter About Visual Information. So just that's all I want to say on charts. He wrote a whole book on how he was very interesting how there's so much mis-extrapolation coming out of charts, and you can take them and turn them into what you really want to. And I think that's it's something to recognize with any chart. And we're talking about 44 people here, and so there was a lot of good comments made on that. On the overcrowding, you know, this becomes how do you, I'll get off here real quick. How do you go about that? How would you ever measure overcrowding? That would be a major study, and that's going to be very expensive. And the question is, who should pay for this? I don't think the ratepayers are up for this. This, you know, major surveys and stuff. This is the burden of the ratepayers, and I think this has to go before them.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Thank
for
you.
Going over.
Good evening. My name is Matt Adams. I'm the president of Mike's Bikes here locally, and also a new e-bike rider. Contrary to a lot of the stories that you've heard from e-bike riders in these meetings in the past, I don't need to ride an e-bike. I don't have any physical limitations. I am strong enough to ride up all the hills, but I choose to ride an e-bike because in a lot of situations it's more fun. And tonight's meeting is about user conflict. And in my experience on an e-bike, having an e-bike versus my regular bike does not increase the chance of any sort of user conflict. I am in control of the bicycle. I decide how fast I go up, down, and around corners. Whether or not I have a motor just helps me get up the hills. One quick anecdote example, today I rode up Loma Alta. On my regular bike, I normally ride at 5 miles an hour. Today I was able to ride at 9. So we're not talking about incredible speeds. There's no increase of a user conflict. When riding downhill, I'm coasting and braking. The motor does not have any kind of impact on any kind of trail with where turns are important. Again, it's my own ability to control the bike rather than having a motor assist. So when we're talking specifically about user conflict, whether I have my acoustic bike or my electronic bike, it doesn't make a difference for how I'm going to impact other users. I think putting resources into campaigns like we heard earlier is going to do way more to reduce any kind of user conflict rather than regulating whether or not I have a motor on my bike or not. Thank you.
Okay, next I have a comment card for just says simply Bill has an e-bike comment, followed by Dan Cressman.
Thank you. My name is Bill Rostenberg. I ride a mountain bike. It's the old-fashioned kind that has two pedals and a chain. I'm in my mid-60s. With each additional year, I find it more challenging. I wish I was strong enough and young enough to be able to go up all these hills like maybe once I was. But with each additional year, I find it more difficult to ride other than flat surfaces. And with each additional year, I find it more important to stay active. My personal preference is to stay active by hiking and biking. I greatly prefer that than going indoors and going to a gym and riding a Stairmaster for 20 minutes. I'm fascinated and kind of baffled by the whole conversations, surveys, and discussions, because they seem to have an underlying assumption, or maybe I shouldn't call it a presumption of guilt, that there's a basis, an underlying opinion, not data-driven basis, that there's something nefarious about e-bikes compared to non-e-bikes, and I'm completely baffled. It's as if somebody asked me as a parent, how would I feel if my daughter dated someone riding a motorcycle? And I'd probably convey this image of black leather-clad Hell's Angels. But if I thought about it a little further, I might replace that by an image of clean-cut guy who's got a moped who's really as fed up as I am with the traffic on the roads. And so is this whole discussion and series of monthly meetings where there doesn't seem to be data of more conflict accidents between e-bikes more than regular bikes. There doesn't seem to be data of erosion. Where did you guys start all this? Is there not some underlying presumption of guilt, and maybe that's too harsh a word, that there's something less good about an e-bike than a non-e-bike? And maybe that's something to think about. I guess it's a classic rhetorical question. I don't have any data on this, but I would suspect that at least a slight majority of e-bike riders are also qualified for their ARP cards. And they're probably not the people that want to tear up the environment. If there really needs to be a distinction between e-bikes and non-e-bikes from a regulatory or allowed on this property perspective, then should there also be regulations that say we need to study whether bikes with 29-inch tires are more damaging and 29ers are more less courteous riders than those with 27.5-inch tires? If that's the case, we should probably say that we should not allow Teslas on the highway because they're all speed demons, and we should not allow a Prius on the highway because they're too slow and they're going to cause accidents. Or maybe, and don't take this the wrong way, maybe we need to do a scientific study to see if we should ban all bicycle riders who weigh more than 250 pounds, because clearly they're causing more erosion than those that are less than 250 pounds. So my closing is I'm baffled. I'm really baffled. It almost reminds me of before my time, but when many of the houses in this county were built in the 40s and 50s, and I'm sure you've all seen CCNRs that did not allow certain races or certain language-speaking individuals to own property. I'm trying to find a difference between those horribly wrong regulations of land ownership. And maybe it's not a rhetorical question. Maybe it's a question to be answered now. Is there an underlying presumption of guilt?
Your time's up. Thank you very much. All right, Dan Crest.
Can we respond at all?
I'm Dan Crestman. I've been hiking and biking from my home in Mill Valley the last 35 years up on the mountain. And the Marin Trail people, you just do a fantastic job. I've seen you at West Point Inn. I've seen you at the Muir Beach Stables on the dirt fondo that Tom put together. And I think the key thing that we're talking about here is the user groups. There's different user groups, and it's the interface. When they come together, that's when the proverbial, you know, stuff happens, right? The friction. So they've done a great job of eliminating that friction. They're a good beacon of that. And I think the more we can do that, the better. One of the problems on the mountain, it was said earlier, there's five different agencies that me as a consumer of the outdoors we can cross into these agencies, and I don't know where I'm going half the time. And it's the signage issue. So I can tell you MMWD does a good job of signage telling me what I can't do. On the signs, but I think if there were signs like slow and say hello at all the key junction points on all the five agencies, one sign, all five agencies would make a huge difference. And I think the one TAM people are looking at that to make that signage. But the more we could do to encourage the one TAM people to have a unified signage and start with slow and say hello, I think that would be a great one. And that'll set the tone for people's behavior when they're out on the mountain. Thanks.
I hope that we're not consumers of the outdoors, that we're something
Thank
else.
Thank you. So the last card I hear is Debbie DeRosio? Dorison.
I'll be very brief. I just want to bring this up because I received this.
You could use the microphone, sorry.
I received this today, and I just wanted to read it out. It's the year's best outdoor product, revolutionizing mountain biking. The year's best outdoor product is a new form of e-bike, and it can be looked at in the issue of Gear Patrol magazine. It will amplify your power by up to 410%, allowing you to tackle lines that would seem ridiculous on just about any other bike. It goes into great detail about how you can go up the bumps and lumps and go backwards and the compression and all that stuff. And it's not just a downhill bomber. It's rethought its geometry and so on and so on. So I just want to bring this up because you don't know what e-bikes will become.
Are you going to get one of those?
There are going to be great advancements. It's only $8,000. It can be yours. And so on. I'll be glad to give you, I'll print up the whole article, but I don't want to take up the time now. I just want to say, think of the future before you get too far into this.
Can I borrow your bike when you get it?
All right. That's the end of the public comment cards. Thank you all very much for coming. I just want to give, a round of applause to all of the members of the public who joined, as well as the CAC, and give Crystal, Sean, Brett, MMW staff, D staff, the opportunity to provide any closing comments before we wrap up.
I'm good.
Good. All right. Well, we will be in touch very soon with, as I said, kind of the process suggestion for how to formulate recommendations. In the meantime, I hope you all enjoy the holidays and have a very fantastic new year. Thank you.